The side trip to Tonga to put these analog radio stations in occurred when HRH, as he asked me to call him, visited my home in the Berkeley Hills and saw my amateur radio system. And it turns out there's only two radio stations in Tonga. And it's a group of 100 islands in the deep South Pacific. And so before I knew it, I was sitting in Vavao, one of their more beautiful islands, with HRH on his birthday party, having him speak the first words on the Radio Tonga station. And this is my friend Eric.
This sounds a little like the white man's burden.
I work with Tonga to help them get on the internet. And then back in Nuku'alofa, which is the capital, this is the Minister of Communications, we set the other FM radio station up. And I turned the keys to the station over to the local youth, who brought in all their CDs of rock music and hip-hop and rap and played it. And one of them said to me, oh, we're so happy you gave us this station because we don't have any way to play our music because the government and the Methodist Church, who ran the other station, didn't approve. So I wound up spending an extra week in Tonga. It was rather fascinating, and I also found out everything there is broken. When they found out I could fix things, I thought they were never going to let me leave. But as a corollary, I stayed at this wonderful beach hotel called the Good Samaritan, and they said, oh, you can have everything free, food, wine, drink, whatever. And the next morning, there were 10 Tongans with broken radios and broken, can you fix this? Can you fix this? Then I published a home video album called Illuminated Music with several of these works on it as the home video market emerged. And we sold a few, about 10,000. That was our goal, to get them out there. Now they're collector's items. I don't even know if you can find them on eBay or not. But about that parallel with a lot of that other work, I started a company, the first of several companies I started. I became interested in startups and companies as a new artistic modality, way to assemble and compose human talent and people. And one of the areas we had a lot of success in was electronic toys and games. And from 1978 on up until the present, you know, I've had involvement in designing several dozen electronic toys and games. Video game called Save the Whales that we put out for the Atari 2600.
The artist as a businessman. Steve Beck provides a good model.
In fact, if you ever get back to West Orange, New Jersey to visit the Edison National Historical Monument, they have a couple of these dolls here. Of course, it didn't work. They broke. They had a mechanical phonograph mechanism. Not a cylinder, but a disc. Supposedly the first time a disc was used. And supposedly there's 5,000 of them buried out there somewhere. And I'd like to go back and try and dig them up someday. But one of my favorite all-time of this category of work was Talking Wrinkles, an interactive, artificially intelligent talking toy. Wrinkles is here tonight. Would you like to meet him for about a minute?
Yeah?
Okay. Well, then let me bring him out here. And,
I'm sleepy.
He's sleepy. He's actually a puppet.
Oh, he wants to kiss me.
Oh, he wants a kiss.
Hey.
He knows if you kiss him, he's got sensors. If you want to tickle him in his tummy, he laughs. Let's feed him his bone. He's eating it. Hear that crunch? Take it away. Let's put him to sleep, because actually, if you leave him lay alone for a while, he'll fall asleep. I think I found a bug. There.
Bye-bye.
Again, thank you. Thank you very much. This was part of my interest in multiples, mass editions. Coleco Industries, who we licensed Wrinkles to, sold only a million of them. We also did this breakdance game and cartoon, and we'll just look at a minute or less than a minute of this, because we wound up entering this in SIGGRAPH, and they accepted us and gave us an art show award, an animation show award. And again, this was done in an Apple II computer with custom software that we created. My first company was called BeckTech, and we were based up at the Claremont Hotel, and I had a studio of about 40 programmers and animators and sound artists. And
I'm just wondering how appropriate it is to poach street culture from the heights of the Claremont Hotel.
The Apple II, the IBM PCs. the premise was the Lone Breaker, like the Lone Ranger, would take you around the world and kind of... I think this was around the time that Michael Jackson moonwalking was very popular. In fact, we kind of cloned the sound of Thriller and flipped the inverted the chords and so on. E.T. had come out, so of course we had to have E.T. breakdancing. And it was a charming little piece done very low tech. And again, this is my opening quote, states, the way lies not in the equipment. And you have, hopefully, an interesting and fun idea. Even on very simple, low-level equipment, you can make a nice work. Now, one thing about my art that's been great is that it's gotten me invitations to fascinating places all around the world.
Now he's showing the PowerPoint slide with a number of company logos and then the artist's name underneath the logos.
And invited me to the Tepia Center to the HARP Symposium on Advanced Research and Planning, where I gave a presentation on the phosphotron in virtual light. And I shared a panel with my very good friend and partner in Japan, Mitsuhiro Takamura, a media aesthetician at the University of Tokyo. I think that's a great title. Scott Fisher from MIT, pioneer in virtual reality.
And this is a slide of two young women in dark shades.
All around Tokyo, I was invited in giving phosphotron seances, wiring up men and pretty girls. So. It was a lot of fun, and the Japanese culture just resonated with me so powerfully. I was given the gift of a week in Kyoto, where I made a pilgrimage to Mount Kurama and visited the sacred Shinto shrine.
I think this description of Japan reveals more about him than Japan.
And enjoyed the hot springs in the onsen, and came across this beautiful yuniba, or pebble garden. When I was so moved by these pebbles arranged and formed in a garden-like arrangement, that inspired me to think about how I might combine luminous light and video light into this pebble garden. Well, another stroke of good luck is I was invited and commissioned to appear and create a piece for the Artek Biennale in Nagoya. This was at the peak of the Japanese economic bubble. And I'll tell you, they spared nothing to bring artists over and commission us. And
I'm just confused. I'm wondering how, as an artist, he can be taking risks. There seems to be very little resistance to his art.
They could come and participate. And I wound up paying the students out of my commission when they delivered me a large briefcase full of freshly printed $100 U.S. bills, which I'm almost sure they were printing right there. This is just a taste. It was in a dim, darkened room in a form. And the coup de grace was this reflecting sphere that I put atop it so that as you, the viewer, experienced the work, you could reflect on yourself, reflecting on yourself, trying to be true to the spirit of the univa as a place of self-reflection. So this piece was up for about 4 months, and they said 5 million visitors came. Unfortunately, the fire department would not let me keep the candles going as considered a hazard to the public. But the rest of the piece held up, and in fact, it worked out luckily that there. This is just a taste. It was in a dim, darkened room, and of course there's an ambient. Audio score of my own composition to include it with this piece. I guess, you know, you kind of had to be there to really get the full effect, but one of my favorite moments is when the public started coming in. This little boy came in with his father, and he started to do what I would wanted people to do, hope they would do, which was to interact with the piece by moving the pebbles around. And at first, his father was telling him, no, no, but if you heard me in there, I'm going, hey, 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 yes, 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 mess with it, play around with it. And I always enjoyed the fact that my work could reach and have a connection with even a very young soul, as well as people and children of all ages. And in fact, even the grown-ups started to see what the kid was doing and started doing it too. So it was like, all right, it really worked. The desired effect was achieved. So just again, we don't have time to look at the whole piece, but these patterns weave on and on and on. And here you see me, of course, adding the weaver on top of the original analog synthesizer, and I could just kind of pretty much weave away to my heart's content and generate this footage by the art. I actually licensed some of these designs to an Italian fabric company when I was invited to the Pre-Italia in Milano in 1978. So it's always been a lot of fun, and it was always great to be at the first showing of this at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art because people really, really liked it. Then in Japan, it was shown in the Museum of Contemporary Art of Tokyo, and some executives from Mitsubishi saw it, and they called me up because they had just invented and sold the first one of their large outdoor plasma video screens to the New York Mets baseball team. And they saw the diamond patterns and arranged a contract to license my video weavings to show at every New York Mets baseball game. So before there were the dot races, I was up on this giant plasma screen. And it's plasma. It's plasma gas discharge. You know, the players are out there going, what the heck is this? They figured it was distracting the batter or the opponents. I don't know. The Mets came in last place that year, so they never renewed the license. Maybe had something to do with it.
Here is a certain element of success to this work, and the measurements are monetary units and popularity.
Venues. And most recently, I've been translating video weaving patterns onto canvas. Let's see, what else is he up to? Well, of course, color video iPods out, so of course I'm putting the video weavings and other works onto it. This is one I gave to my wife for a Christmas gift, so I delivered it to her with video weavings and sunsets on it and some of our wedding pictures. But their screen is actually quite good.
I don't usually have advertisements in my podcasts, but...
Oh, this is a nice one. This is coming out in September called Art Speak, and it's books that play 250 bird songs. I know you can get this on your computer, but this is a book. It's a coffee table art book. It's beautifully printed in four color with Audubon and other artists and text. And embedded in the book is a chip. Believe you me, this is chip costs a dollar. It's a low bitrate digital signal processing chip, only 2 megabytes of memory. It was no mean task to get all these sounds. Custom audio engineer sculpted to compress these down and fit and sound good. So this is coming out from Chronicle Books, Becker and Mayer. It's called Art Speak. It's going to cost $39. So bird lovers enjoy, and they're going to do one on George Lucas and Star Wars. They're going to do one on Stan Lee, the comic book. We're going to do the birds of Europe. We're going to be animal sounds. Again, compressing data, making it sound good or look good in a small amount of space with small processing power, that's an area that I've learned a little bit about how to do that.